This is Fresh Air. I'm Dave Davies, filling in for Terry Gross. One of the most memorable political conventions in American history was the 1968 Democratic Convention in Chicago. The week was marked by bloody clashes between demonstrators and Chicago police, prompting Walter Cronkite at one point to declare the city of Mayor Richard Daley a police state. After the convention, prosecutors charged 8 leaders of the anti-war movement with conspiracy to incite riot, leading to one of the most memorable and chaotic trials of the era. Earlier this year, Terry spoke with documentary filmmaker Brett Morgan, whose film Chicago 10 uses archival footage and recreates the trial through animation, using the voices of such actors as Roy Scheider, Mark Ruffalo, Liev Schreiber, and Hank Azaria. The movie comes out on DVD next week. Before we hear Terry's interview with Brett Morgan, we're going to hear an example of the fascinating archival tape he included in the film. It's a montage from a 1968 meeting of the protest's organizers. You'll hear the voices of Tom Hayden, Abby Hoffman, Rennie Davis, and Ed Sanders.
We have to establish a network for discussion and preparation that takes into account the possibility that you might want, at the time of the convention, a very great outpouring of protest, or the other possibility that you might want protests to occur on a more moderate scale at the convention and in other parts of the country.
We believe that politics is the way you live your life, not who you support. It's not in terms of rallies or speeches or political programs. It's in terms of images and in terms of transforming people's lives.
We are coming to Chicago at the time of the Democratic National Convention, not to disrupt the convention, not to confront the police, National Guard troops, or men in the United States Army, but to challenge the policies of militarization that have been felt so strongly and brutally in Vietnam.
We're going to invest our time, our semen, our love vectors, our intellect in America, and we're not going to allow our country to become one of the fabled damned of nations, to join the Mayan ruins and all the other violent civilizations that have been snuffed.
Brett Morgan, welcome to Fresh Air. People know of the Chicago 7 trial. Your movie is called Chicago 10. Why have you called it that?
Well, you know, it was originally the trial of the Chicago 8, and a few months into the case, Bobby Seale was severed, and it became then known as the Chicago 7. But I came across a quote from Jerry Rubin at some point in which he said, "Anyone who calls us the Chicago 7 is a racist because you're not acknowledging the presence of Bobby Seale. So call us the Chicago 8, but really you should call us the Chicago 10, because our two attorneys, Lem Weinglass and Bill Kunstler, went down with us."
And they were sentenced to contempt.
They were. Kunstler was sentenced to 4.5 years of contempt. I think Weinglass got 1.5. And ultimately, the movie is really about appropriating this time period and rendering it as something new. So we decided to rebrand it as the Chicago 10.
Now, before we talk more about how you've made your movie, let's just talk a little bit more about the event itself for anybody who doesn't remember it well or wasn't alive at the time. The demonstration in Lincoln Park at the time of the 1968 Democratic National Convention, it was more than just a demonstration. Abby Hoffman, one of the organizers, described it as total theater, a festival of life. Just talk a little bit about what the intentions were of the organizers.
Well, this was one of the problems with the conspiracy trial in which the government tried to suggest that there was sort of a singular motivation behind the movement. There were a number of different groups that wanted to protest in Chicago. Basically, as early as March of 68, these various organizations approached the city for permits, and Daley, from the get-go, refused to give anyone permits to protest. I think his feeling was he was using the convention as a way to showcase the city. He had spent a great deal of time and money sort of in these beautification efforts. And I think in his mind, the protesters would sort of pollute and dirty that image. And sometime during this process, I think it was in April, after Dr. King was assassinated and they had the riots, Mayor Daley gave the famous shoot to kill order. In which he basically told the assembled media that he was ordering the police to shoot and kill anyone who was involved in any larceny or rioting. And that was kind of an effort to scare the protesters from coming to Chicago. And in fact, it did. But ultimately, there were two main groups that we focus on in the film, the Yippies and the mobilization. the mobilization, which was fronted by Rennie Davis, Tom Hayden, and David Dellinger, wanted to do more of a traditional protest in the parks of Chicago. The Yippies, on the other hand, wanted to create a festival of life, as they put it, a celebration of life in the shadows of the convention of death. And what they had envisioned was a three-day sort of Woodstock festival, if you will, with bands like the Rolling Stones and the Beatles, and a sort of merging of the hippie countercultural movement with the new left.
Well, the police confronted the demonstrators in the park. They charged them. They tear gassed them. They beat them. And tell us what the charges were at the Chicago 7 trial.
Right. So
Chicago
after
8.
the riots in Chicago, we can't even really call them riots because I think the proper terminology is they were police riots. It was really the police going berserk. And for 5 days, they senselessly attacked the demonstrators in a manner that was as vicious as, in my mind, the Rodney King beatings, just on a massive scale. So 3 months after the convention, Nixon won office, and one of the first things that John Mitchell did was indict the leaders of the anti-war movement for conspiracy with crossing state lines with the intent to start a riot. This was, ironically, a new law that was part of the Civil Rights Act. The Chicago 8 are the only people who've ever been tried under the Civil Rights Act and were the first people ever tried it and the only people ever tried under it.
Brett Morgan's film about the conspiracy trial of protesters at the 1968 Democratic Convention is called Chicago 10. We'll hear more after a break. This is Fresh Air. We're listening to Terry's interview earlier this year with documentary filmmaker Brett Morgan. His film about the trial of protesters after the 1968 Democratic Convention, called Chicago 10, is out on DVD next week.
Well, this is really going to be interesting. We're going to play an excerpt of your movie with actors portraying the people at the Chicago 8 trial, and then we're going to hear the tape from the actual trial. So let's start with the excerpt of your movie. And again, this is an animated excerpt. And this is the day of the National Vietnam Moratorium. So right before Judge Hoffman enters the court, Dave Dellinger, who's a pacifist and was a leader of an anti-war group, gets up to, and he's one of the defendants, he gets up to address the people in the court before the judge enters. And he explains that the moratorium is a day to protest the continuation of the war and to urge the withdrawal of U.S. forces in Vietnam. And he says that in observance of the moratorium, and to kind of get the sense of the people who are dying senselessly in the war, he's going to read the names of the people who have died in the war this week. So he starts reading the names, and at this point, the court is called to order. Judge Hoffman comes in, and then the prosecutor objects to Dellinger's little speech, and then Kunstler, the defense attorney, objects to the prosecutor. We're going to pick it up as Judge Hoffman has walked in and Dave Dellinger wants to continue speaking.
Mr. Hoffman, we are observing the moratorium.
I am Judge Hoffman, sir.
I believe in equality, sir. So I prefer to call people Mr. or by their first names.
You will sit down, sir.
Can I be heard,
Your Honor? I object to this man speaking out in court.
We would like to propose a moment of silence.
You needn't object. I forbid him to disrupt the proceedings.
Your Honor, I want to object to Mr. Ferrand's yelling in the presence of the jury. Your Honor has admonished...
Your Honor, this is outrageous. This man is a mouthpiece. Look at him. He's wearing an armband of his clients. The government protests his attitude and requests the court move to take notice of his conduct.
Your Honor, I think that the temper and the expression on Mr. Ferrand's face speaks more than any picture could tell.
My contempt for Mr. Kunstler!
Mr. Kunstler...
To call me a mouthpiece and for your honor not to open his mouth and say that's not to be done in your court, I think violates the sanctity of this court. That is a word your honor knows is contemptuous and contumacious.
Don't tell me what I know.
I want him admonished, Your Honor, and I request you to do that.
I do not admonish the United States attorney because he was properly representing his client, the United States of America.
To call another attorney a mouthpiece.
You, a lawyer, permitting your client to stand up in the presence of the jury and disrupt these proceedings. I don't know how to characterize it.
Your Honor, we do not permit or not permit our clients. They are free, independent human beings who have been brought by the government this courtroom.
They're free, but they'll conform to the law, and they'll conform to the direction of the court here, sir.
Are you turning down my request?
I not only turn it down, I ignore it.
That speaks louder than words.
That's an excerpt of the new film, The Chicago 10, made by my guest, Brett Morgan. And we heard Roar Scheider as Judge Hoffman. Who else did we hear in that scene, Brett?
That was Nick Nolte as Prosecutor Thomas Ferrand, Dylan Baker as David Dellinger, and Liev Schreiber as Bill Kunstler.
Now, we're going to hear an excerpt of the actual trial, a real audio recording made at the trial that you've brought with you. And before we hear it, is there anything in particular you'd like us to listen for?
The judge's voice, I mean, two things to listen to. Thomas Ferrand.
The prosecutor.
The prosecutor and the way that he is just absolutely exploding in the courtroom and the inflection of Judge Hoffman's voice is a very unique characteristic that Roy spent a lot of time trying to mimic.
Okay, so we're going to pick up this part of the real tape with the prosecutor objecting to Dave Dellinger's speaking about the Vietnam moratorium.
Your Honor, I object to this man speaking.
You needn't object. I forbid him to disrupt the proceeding. I note for the record that his name is
David Dellinger.
You needn't fill out my sentences for me, sir. I note for the record that the name of this man who has attempted to disrupt the proceedings in this court is David T. Dellinger, and the record will clearly indicate that, Miss Reporter, and I direct him and all the others not to repeat such occurrences.
Your Honor, I just want to object to Mr. Ferrand yelling in the presence of the jury. Your Honor has admonished many counsel, many times on the defense side for yelling, but particularly when the jury was halfway out the door.
I never used the word yelling.
Raising your voice.
If a lawyer representing his client didn't protest that sort of thing, he'd be a mighty poor lawyer for his client.
But not in the presence of that jury, which was deliberately done, Your Honor, as that door was
open. Your Honor, that is outrageous. This man is a monkey. Look at his words, a man like his client. Your Honor, any lawyer who comes into a courtroom and has no respect for the court and acts in conjunction with that kind of conduct before the court, Your Honor, the government protests this attitude and would like the state to move the court to make note of this conduct before this court.
Note has been duly made on the record.
Your Honor, I think that the temper and the tone of voice and the expression on Mr. Ferrand's face speaks more than any picture could tell.
Mr.
Counselor, Your Honor,
to call me a mouthpiece. And Your Honor, not to open his mouth and say that's not to be done in your court, I think violates the sanctity of this court. That is a word that Your Honor knows is contemptuous and contumacious.
Don't tell me what I know.
Well, then you tell me, Your Honor,
and
you have heard that word used in your court before.
Here, Mr.
And wearing an armband in memoriam to dead, Your Honor, is no disgrace in this country.
That's an excerpt of the actual Chicago 8 trial, a real audio tape of the trial. And my guest, Brett Morgan, has just made a movie about the trial. Brett, watching the movie, I remember the trial, not that I was there, but I certainly remember coverage of it and how important it was and what a real circus it was. Watching the movie, I was kind of surprised at my reaction because although I think Judge Hoffman was so wrong for this case, he didn't comprehend what was happening at all. He didn't comprehend how or why the people who were on trial were playing him and trying to turn this into political theater. And so all of his reactions were so kind of tone deaf to what was happening and just kind of like feeding, the theater as opposed to getting control of the court. But there was a part of me that almost felt for him because, like, what was he supposed to do? Like, everybody was playing him. Everybody was trying to make it into political theater. And you feel him, you know, like, trying to keep control of the court and being clueless about how to do it.
Well, I will tell you that's a credit to Roy Scheider. He found a way to empathize with the judge that came through in the film. And you do get the sense that you know, the judge has completely lost control. And by the end of the film, even he, you could get the sense that he wishes he was somewhere else. But I will say, Terry, in all fairness, that the defendants didn't march into the courtroom thinking of this as a big piece of theater. I think there was a lot of division amongst the defendants on how to approach the case. But I think Abby and Jerry's reactions to the judge and the fact that they would often speak out in court had a lot to do with the way the judge handled the case in the early days. And he was so biased against the prejudiced against the defendants. I think that Judge Hoffman, who was, you know, in his last days, saw the defendants as a disease that was polluting America. And it was his moral obligation to cut the head off that snake, very similar to Mayor Daley. And in that sense, I always thought of this as a film as much about parenting and generation gap as it was about cultural revolution.
I think like the most outrageous moment of the Chicago 8 trial, which you depict in the animated part of your movie, is when Bobby Seale is being spoken of by the prosecutor and he insists on representing himself, on speaking for himself. His lawyer is sick and isn't there, and he is being charged with things that he says he is innocent of, and he wants to speak out. The judge refuses to let him speak. Seale insists on speaking. So the judge finally does the most outrageous thing a judge can do. He has Bobby Seale bound and gagged and brought back into the courtroom. And this made news around the world. Why don't we hear a scene from your animated recreation of a Bobby Seale chapter of the trial with Jeffrey Wright as Bobby Seale.
I want to request again, demand again, that I be able to cross-examine the witness. Now, you have Benjamin Franklin and George Washington sitting in pictures behind you, and they were slave owners. That's what they were. They owned slaves. And you acted in the same manner by denying me my constitutional right.
Young man. If you
look, old man, you're being exposed to the public and to the world that you don't
have
wanna
him sit down, Mr. Marshall.
I want to defend myself. I have the right to speak on behalf of my constitutional rights.
I didn't think I would ever live to sit on a bench in a courtroom where George Washington was assailed by a defendant and a judge was criticized for having his portrait on the wall.
The law protects my right not to be discriminated against. Why don't you recognize that?
Mr. Seale, do you want to stop? Or do you want me to
You can't deny me my rights! You can't deny me my constitutional rights!
Take that defendant into the room, in there, and deal with him as he should be dealt with.
I still want to be represented. I want to represent myself. Let me go. I want to represent myself. It's my constitutional right. I got a right.
That's Jeffrey Wright as Bobby Seale in one of the animated scenes from, I guess, Brett Morgan's new movie, Chicago 10, which is a movie about the trial and the demonstrations that led to the trial. There were parts of the demonstration where demonstrators, as they were being beaten by the police, shouted, "The whole world is watching." And did you really get that feeling going through all this footage, like the impact that it made for the world to see this?
Well, it's an interesting question, because what the world saw in 1968 is not what the world will see through my film.
What do you
mean? I watched all of the broadcast of the riots, and except for the last one in front of the Conrad Hilton, you know, there was an electrical strike in Chicago that week. So there was very limited video remote feeds going on. And so in general, what the networks would do is they would send one camera down to a riot to cover it. And then 4 hours later, they would air maybe 45 seconds up to 2 minutes of unedited footage from one perspective. So the march to the Conrad Hilton at the end was culled from over 50 visual sources and over 20 audio sources. And so the events that we're depicting them are really not what the world saw in 1968. What's shocking to audiences when I speak with them about the film is that 70% of America at the time supported Mayor Daley. And the only thing I could explain to them is, you know, the America was presented with a specific image of these riots, and it really took 40 years for us to come around and reconstruct them.
Well, Brett Morgan, thanks so much for talking with us.
Thank you, Terry.
Documentary filmmaker Brett Morgan speaking with Terry Gross earlier this year. His film Chicago 10 is out on DVD next week.